Okay, ready? So we are going forward in Chovos HaLevavos. We're going to finish the introduction today, Be'ezrat Hashem. And then next week we'll do maybe one perek each time. That's kind of my goal. It might be too ambitious. I have no idea because I haven't done this before. So we shall see, okay? But we are going back into Chovos HaLevavos, finishing off the introduction, which has been quite long so far. So let me share it with you. Ready? Here we go. Dun, dun, dun. Okay. It's hard for me because I like reading in my sefer, but I have to, I guess, like, be scrolling on the screen, so I guess I'm not reading on the screen. Okay, so last time, I didn't do a summary of what happened last time, but I should have, but I didn't. So we're just going to go on. I don't even know where I am. Hold on a second. Okay. Okay, Oh, we are doing a lot today. Okay, right, last time we finished the alchemists, we haven't even gone past that. Okay, ready? Here we go. So last time we finished the 10 things that were different between the alchemist and the alchemist, so to speak, and the Baal HaBitachon, and now we are going from there. Ugh, this is annoying. Okay. Can everyone see it? Everyone can see it, right? Here we go. Ki bateach b'Hashem, just kidding. Mitalas HaBitachon b'Hashem be'inyan HaTorah. Okay, so he's going to talk about the benefits, basically, of being a Baal HaBitachon. So again, this ideal person, not us, this ideal person who is a Baal HaBitachon, the benefits for that person in terms of Torah, and then he's going to go also the benefits of those person in terms of the world around him, okay? And it's an interesting distinction because we can't necessarily decipher that ourselves. But here he goes, okay? Again, kibotech b'Hashem, so the Baal Bitachon, right? Somebody who does have this thing called Bitachon that we're all striving for. And he hasn't, by the way, yet defined it. That will happen in Parak Aleph, okay? So he hasn't yet defined what Bitachon is, but he's talking about Bitachon on a high level, I guess. Kibitachon b'Hashem, im hu baal mamon, yemaher lahotzi chovos halokim, v'chovos b'nei adam, imamono, b'nefesh chafetza v'ruach nedava. So the botech b'Hashem, if he has a lot of money, quickly tries to basically do what's right in Hashem's eyes with the money that he has. V'im eino baal mamon, and if he doesn't have money, yireh ki chestron hamamon tova mitovos hamakom leilav. It's fascinating, right? You would think, like, if he doesn't have mamon, then he, like, prays to be able to, I don't know, he prays to get money so that he could discharge the duties that he has. Like, he can't give meiser, he can't give tzedakah. And instead, he's like, pretend that you're the indigent person, right? Pretend that you're the person who doesn't have money. So if you have money, you're giving meiser, you're giving tzedakah, you're basically, like, taking care of Hashem's world with the money that Hashem has given you. Of course, if you have bitachon, like, we check that box, we get that part, right? But if you don't have money and you're a Baal HaBitachon, what does your world look like? You're so happy, okay? It's not fluffy, hold on, give me a second, okay? Let's get there, don't worry, everyone calm down. Okay, so he is happy that he has fewer mitzvos to do because he doesn't have money. He doesn't have to give matanos le'avyonim, he doesn't have to give tzedakah, he doesn't have to give meiser. And instead of being like stressed out that his life situation means that that his avodas Hashem is apparently limited, he's happy about that. Why? Again, how does this make sense with the construct that we're already developing about bitachon? Because what does he say about his life, right? If somebody is someone who doesn't have money, it means that necessarily what God is asking of me, pretend that I'm the person without money, it must mean that what God is asking of me is not a reality in which I would need money to fulfill it. So we always do this, right? This is exactly the orientation that we have to do. We first look at our lives and we say, "What, given the conditions of my life, what is Hashem asking of me?" Not, it must be like, Rav Lichter was talking about how, like, you know, people who don't have money, they'll ask people who do have money to give them money to give so that they could give tzedakah. You know, and he's like, that's not bitachon. He's like, we feel super firm because we're like trying to do the mitzvos that we're unable to do. But that's not what we're trying. That's not the right orientation. The right orientation is to first look at our lives and say, given the circumstances that my life presents to me right now, that's my avodas Hashem. And therefore, any mitzvos that I'm putter from, I'm happy about. I'm perfectly fine being putter from mitzvos that I can't do in my current situation because that must be my avodas Hashem right now. Yeah, Carrie.
Okay. So, I don't know if this is, like, a good question for right now. I don't know if you necessarily have an answer right now. But at some point, like, could we talk about how this fits with, like, our reality of, like, people, let's say, not having money and not being able to put food on the table for their kids and family, and or whatever other piece, like, we still have tefillah and you're allowed to ask for things.
Right.
Like, those other pieces, like, it's a little bit stressful to, like, learn this and not feel like there's also an avenue to ask for things that we don't have.
That's totally a great point. It was interesting. Last class stressed that point a little bit more, which again, and then I, you know, you called me out that I did not yet upload it. But there, it's like, I love the word that you use. Like, it's stressful a little bit to hear about it, because tefillah and bitachon are kind of like functioning a little bit more independently when we learn this than we're used to them functioning. Meaning, like, we are supposed to daven, right? If we have a reality that we're confronted with that is not agreeable to us, is unpleasant, and limits our avodas Hashem, we're supposed to daven to change it. And at the same time that we're supposed to daven to change it, if we are the Baal HaBitachon, which nobody is, I'm certainly not, right? But in this idealization of who the Baal HaBitachon is, it almost like he doesn't really mind. So Carrie, your actual question is, which I have no idea how to answer and I will continue to think about, and again, like, let's all continue to think about it, is if somebody is a Baal HaBitachon, won't they never daven? Right?
Somebody who, so that's my question.
Yeah.
Why, like, if Hashem put us in a certain situation, like, shouldn't we be just like, okay, this is what's supposed to happen, like, Hashem plans everything. So what's the purpose of even davening for something different?
Something to change. That is a fantastic question. It's a fantastic question. I don't know. Secondly, I will think about it, right? And thirdly, it's, again, because, right, tefillah is necessarily, like, future-oriented, right? It's trying to change something about your own future that would be better and that apparently Hashem wants us to do, right? Hashem wants us to daven that our future will be better and different in ways that we can imagine it. And at the same time, bitachon is, like, in my present state. So again, maybe that's like flirting with the answer, and I'll keep thinking about it, and please do also. And like, let's keep that on the back burner, Carrie, because it's almost like the elephant in the room here. And I thank you for articulating it like very, very well. Right. But in the same way that bitachon is like currently right now, tefillah is future oriented necessarily. Right. What do I need to do my avodas Hashem better? And even while we're asking for that, it could be in our lives right now, before we get there, there's a certain understanding that what Hashem wants, that my life is still valuable right now. It doesn't become valuable when I get whatever I'm davening for. It is valuable, and there is what for me to do, and there is something that Hashem wants from me, meaning there is that my life as it is right now is something that Hashem wants. He has like an agenda with me in my life. I have a purpose and a mission right now with my life, even as I want it to change later. Right, so again, let's say somebody who is like, God forbid, you know, sick with some ailment, right? So they're davening to get better, and let's say they do get better. Okay, so let's say, God forbid, somebody has an ailment and they daven to get better and they do get better. So it's tefillah is not the only thing that's functioning there, right? It's not only that you're davening to get better and you do get better, but it's also like when the person is not yet better, their life in Hashem's eyes, even though, let's say, they can't daven, they can't go to shul, they can't do hakafos, they can't, you know, eat, they can't be at the Seder, whatever it is, right, that they're missing out, still, even in those moments before they got better, their life in terms of avodas Hashem was just as valuable to God as after they get better and they can do all those mitzvos. So they should be davening, but the value of their life stays the same, basically, as long as they're at some point engaged in avodas Hashem. And their avodas Hashem, even though it looks super different, and one of them is doing that avodas Hashem that we think somebody should do, meaning eating matzah and giving matanos levyonim and, you know, whatever, doing hakafos and blah, blah, blah. And one of them, somebody is like in bed spending 3 minutes a day learning Chol V'Salav Avoshar B'Techa. But like their avodas Hashem is equal in Hashem's eyes. That's the piece that's important here. That's, I think, the foundation of B'Techa. Is that my present also is valuable, even as I'm striving for something else in my future, I think. But let's keep thinking about it. Thank you for saying that out loud. Good. Again, and you see that here also, right? You see that like, even though he's putter from mitzvos, he's perfect. He's like fine with it in a certain space. The Baal B'Techon. Because he has this construct of like right now, even as I'm davening that I should get more money, let's say in the future, right? Right now, even though I'm put there for mitzvos, there's something for me to do right now in my own life. Okay, and then I'll skip the rest of this paragraph basically, but he talks about, meaning, you know, you could have money and be Baal HaBitachon, and you could not have money and be a Baal HaBitachon. If somebody doesn't have money and they're a Baal HaBitachon, it means that they
again, are working on this foundation that even though they don't have money, their avodas Hashem is just as valuable as they, as had they been able to do the mitzvot that they need to do with the money. Somebody who does have money, right, there's a certain stress also of having that, right? Because now they have this like massive amount of responsibility towards avodas Hashem with their money. Right, you're never putter. It's not like the person who has money is like has an easy bit of avodas Hashem. The person who doesn't has a hard bit. As long as you're working, any reality you find yourself in has an equal amount of work that you could do, that you could, that you're called to do, whether or not you have money or don't. And any, every other situation, right? You have blank or you don't have blank. And that's the point, is that we want to see ourselves that no matter what situation we're in, God has an agenda with us, and we are valuable right now. And not only when we get that thing that we want, and then hopefully we will get. Okay, so again, here he's saying, so, right, so he says, you know, and in a way, a Balei Bitachon without money, you know, has it just as easy in certain ways as a Balei Bitachon with money, because a Balei Bitachon with money is so stressed out to make sure that he is fulfilling his obligations with his money. Okay, so again, we see again the personality. It's fascinating. I think this piece especially, and again, lands, I think, as we're saying, like a little bit later and a little bit better on us, but bitachon does not divorce us from our reality. Bitachon does not make us like up in the clouds where we're like, I have a lot of money and I also have bitachon, so I'm going to like invest in like one place and then I'm going to be totally fine and Hashem will take care of me. Right? And it also doesn't say, I don't have any money and it doesn't really matter and I don't need to do anything because like God will just take care of me and it'll all work out fine. Right? We see that like somebody who has bitachon is very entrenched in their world. We're going to see it develop over the next few paragraphs also. Right? A Balei Bitachon with money is stressed out about his money because he feels like he's responsible for it. He has to make sure it's being used well in Avodas Hashem. And that is a tirda, right? Tirda ha-machshava shel bal ha-mamon v'hasmadas da'agaso. He's worried and he's like entrenched in making sure that his money is being used correctly. So again, having bitachon doesn't mean that we're like floating in the air. It means that we're very much engaged in our lives. Umehen ki avoteach ba'Hashem lo yimna'ehu rav ha-mamon mi avoteach ba'Hashem mipnei she'einenu somech al ha-mamon v'hu ke'inyon ha-pikadon tziva lihishtamesh bo al panim mi yachodim. Okay. So again, he said somebody who has money also, you know, they're not, they're really, a Balei Bitachon who has money, his relationship with his money is also not that he's dependent on his money for his own personality, for his own place in the world, right? Money is something that he has, just like other things are things that he has to do the right thing in the world with it. And he feels a lot of responsibility. That's what we saw in the previous paragraph. He feels an immense amount of responsibility to make sure that his money is being used well in the world. But he's not dependent on having money. Again, right, that's the Balei Bitachon. He knows that had he been someone without money, he also would have equal avodas Hashem. But and that's why now that he has money, he feels a responsibility towards dispensing that in avodas Hashem, right? So one second, I was going to say something else. Oh, so again, this is not only about money, right? It's about anything. Like there should be no thing that defines our avodas Hashem. We have things and we use them in avodas Hashem, and when they become the right thing to use, we use them. When they're not the right thing to use, we don't use them. We're like, I told like a fascinating example here, where he said like at some point he was in Bnei Brak in yeshiva, and there were like Scud missiles being launched at Bnei Brak. And he said that like the government basically gave all of them gas masks and you were supposed to shave your beard so that you could put on a gas mask, right? So putting on a gas mask in case there is a Scud missile or whatever, like an actual like attack that you need a gas mask for, is what kind of mitzvah?
Pikuach nefesh.
Good, right? It's pikuach nefesh. It's like a deraisa pikuach nefesh, right? And again, you were supposed to shave your beard so that it was safer to do that. How many people in his yeshiva actually shaved their beards? What's your guess?
Zero.
Right. Maybe. So he said one, and he said it wasn't him. And he said one guy actually shaved his beard and came the next day and was like mortified that he was the only guy who shaved his beard. Right? But he said like it was a deraisa. We should have shaved our beards, but we were so connected to like feeling frum because of our beards that we couldn't give it up. Even in a situation where it was the right thing to do to give it up. Isn't that a fascinating like example of this, right? Is that like anything that's our thing that we're doing because it's the right thing, we have to be able to just do the right thing. It's not about that thing, it's about doing the right thing. that we're doing with that thing, right? So again, that's the example of Mammon. He uses a lot of examples with Mammon. I assume it's like the most ubiquitous example. And it's also extremely difficult. Like Harry says, like, it's very hard to read this. It's very hard to like take it to heart. Especially for people who are actually struggling here. It's like, what am I supposed to think and feel? And that's always like the undercurrent as we read both about Parnassa and also about our own realities. Okay, lechazron. Okay, I'm gonna skip this paragraph. Right, again, we keep. It's the same thing. Right, and if he loses it, it doesn't shake him to the core, because that's not how he defines himself. In the same way that his beard isn't how he defines himself, and his, you know, kippah and his payas aren't how he defines himself, etc. He defines himself as an avodah Hashem. Okay, so for some reason that was bitachon in Torah, even though it talked all about mammon. I don't understand that part. Ach tovelas habitachon ba'olam. The benefit of bitachon in this world, or the purpose of bitachon in this world, mehen min minuchas haliv min hadagos haolamis. So we talked about this again like a few times ago. Something about bitachon is inherently linked to minuchas haliv, or minuchas al nefesh is the version that I have. A certain settlement of your spirit. Min hadagos haolamios, right? You don't get so thrown off by what happens in the world and in your world. V'hashalva minidnud hanefesh v'tza'ara l'chestron ta'avas seha hagufios. Right? Like, like you're just more calm. You're more serene. So Rav Lichter said here, which was like really, really fascinating, he said, you know, sometimes menuchas hanefesh, that term could be like a little dangerous. Because it sounds to us, and once he said this, I was like, it's so true. You know? He's like, it sounds to us like indifference. Menuchas nefesh, like he's just not bothered by the world. And why isn't he bothered by the world? Because like he just doesn't care. He's like indifferent to the world. Like it doesn't really matter what happens. He just like is living in his own little space, or he's like above reality and just doesn't care. And again, he's like, it smacks of the flavor of indifference. And like that's not the flavor. Berkeley, you gonna say something?
I feel like menuchas nefesh is not like indifference. It's more like satisfaction with the current situation.
Good, I love it. Like it's contentment,
less
basically.
Less passive. It's yeah. More like thoughtfully. I don't know, like the right way of like saying it, but I feel like it's more intentional. That's
good.
The word.
I love it. Right? It's not right. Like Rav Lichter is not saying that it is indifferent, but he's like, we have to make sure that in our minds it isn't indifferent. And I like the words that you're putting to it. Right? There's a certain contentment, so to speak, satisfaction with the world. Like it's more, I love what you're saying, it's more active. It's like it's an active engagement with the world in which like your judgment of it settles versus like just divorcing yourself from it and not caring. Yeah, Carrie?
It's interesting because when you said that people, it's like a, could be like complicated to use that term and people might understand it differently. I thought you were gonna say that it's, like people have menuchas nefesh or feel like they have that once everything works out and it's better. And like that's where like my head went. Like Whoa. That's what I think of that. Like, okay, like things are good. Like they're okay. Like we got through whatever. Like that's like how I always like viewed that term.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I love what you're saying, right? Is that menuchas nefesh is so much easier when things are smooth. And here he's saying like for someone who is that Baal HaBitachon, again, that ideal, it's sort of like that all the time. It's not dependent on the external reality, right?
It's kind of like when, like, anxiety settles. Like, that's kind of like what I think Carrie is saying. But
Right, that feeling of like
that we're supposed to have that before things, like during the.
I'm not saying anything that we aren't supposed to do, guys. This is like way above my pay grade, so I'm trying to also just like integrate whatever pieces I can into my life, which I feel like is actually working. Again, like I feel like I'm starting to have like a little bit of a different perspective. Like my perspective is starting to shift around these things, which is like so nice, and I'll share like a little bit of that as we go through this introduction piece. But yeah, exactly right. Like that contentment, that settledment. And the Baal HaBitachon has that kind of like no matter what. It's not when his external circumstances work out, then he feels that contentment. It's just like he has that settlement of his nefesh in his reality all the time. Because again, he has this assumption that his reality is where he's supposed to be. So even if he wants it to change in his future and is davening for it to change in the future, Carrie, we are going to have to keep saying that. You're totally right. You are totally right, right? Even if he wants it to change in his future and he hopes it does change in his future, right now he's a certain amount settled with his reality because he reads it and knows that he has a place in it. Okay, who beheshket ubebitcha ubeshalva beulam hazeh, kamo shekasuv, etc. Umehan menuchas hanefesh mileches bedrachim harachokim, asher hi mechale gufios umaheres hashlamas yimei hachayim, kamo shenemar, etc. So again, another thing that happens if he has menuchas hanefesh, and again, he's going to give the parnasa example, and it's going to be hard for us to deal with, and we're not going to be anywhere near this level, and we're still going to read it, because it's chovas halavavos, and we're going to read it, which is, that again, for his parnasa, which is just like the symbolic example that he's giving here, he doesn't have to run out of his reality, right? He assumes that in the place that he is, with the tools that he has and the reality that's at his disposal, he should have the tools that he needs to get what he needs from life. So he doesn't need to like stress out his body, right? It like it destroys his body. He doesn't have to stress out his body. He doesn't have to destroy his body to get something that he doesn't yet have from far away. So he's both calm and his body is calm, right? He's not doing anything in his reality. Not only like Brecha was saying, anxiety of what he's thinking, but also just what he's doing. He's not doing anything that's like hurting himself in order to get something that he doesn't yet have. So it's said about one of the perushim, which is like a ascetic, someone who stops engaging so much with reality, which again isn't necessarily like an ideal for us, but it was for them. I think it's in Orchos Tzadikim. I think it's one of the chapters, one of those books. Okay, but anyways, not in our again pay grade. Ki holech el eretz rechoka levakish ateref b'tchilas perushuso. Okay, so again, it's a story about this parush, this guy. Okay, so it's a guy before he's a parush, and he goes to seek his livelihood in some distant land. Ufaga adam echad. So again, let's say he's he's on a boat, let's say, and he meets this like ovdei kochavim. He meets this guy who serves avodah zarah, some sort of pagan. Be'ir asher halach elah. Okay, in the city that he's going to seek his livelihood. Amar lo haperush. So this Jew says to this pagan, kama atem betachlis ha'ivaron umeyot ha'havana be'avodaschem l'kochavim. Like, you guys are such doofuses, right? Like, I can't believe you guys are actually a pagan. Like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Okay, that's basically what he says to him. Amar lo ha'amgushi, so that amgushi, whatever that means, this, like, idol worshiper says to him, uma ata oved, and who do you serve? Amar lo, he says, amar lo ha'parush, so the Jew answers, ani oved ha'borei ha'yacho. I serve God who is able to do anything. Hamechalchel ha'echad, Bavatarif Asher Im Kamohu, who sustains everybody and gives everyone what they need, and no one is like him, the one God. Amar Loham Gushi, Pa'alacha Soseres Devarecha. And the Amgushi says to him, oh yeah, because what you're doing like testifies against what you're saying. Amar Lo Parash Hayach. And the Jew says, what do you mean? How? Amar Lo, so the Amgushi says to him, Ilu Haya Masha Amarta Emes, if what you're saying is actually true, Haya Matrifcha Be'ircha, you would find your Parnasa in your own city. If God is all powerful and he's able to sustain everybody, then why do you have to go on a ship and come all the way to my city to get your livelihood here? It would just be in your own city. Kamosha hatrifcha hina, hina. Just like Hashem can give you your parnasa here, he can give you your parnasa where you're from. Velo hayisa torech levo el eretz rechoga kazos. You don't have to go through the whole toil of coming all the way over here. Venifsika tainas haperush. So the perush had nothing to answer. He was like dumbstruck. He had nothing to say back. Veshev laartzo, and he goes back to his land, v'kibel ha'precious min ha'es ahi v'lo yetza mi'iro achar kach. And he takes on this like vow of asceticism, and he doesn't go out of the city again. So again, it's fascinating because we don't see that like he goes back to the city and then like God showers him with like, and he wins the lottery and all that jazz, right? That's not what happened. He goes back to the city and takes like an ascetic vow, meaning he just doesn't need anything anymore. He decides that he doesn't need as much anymore, and then he stays in a city and doesn't travel for business. So again, don't ask me, right? Rav Lichter says that every time he's on a plane going to America to fundraise, he's like worried about sitting next to Amgushi, who's like going to tell him exactly this. He's like, I'm not going to have anything to say to him. Like, what am I going to say? But Rav Lichter says, like, because of that, every time he goes, he never like makes a trip without also like giving something, without also teaching Torah. He doesn't just go and fundraise because then he feels too much like this parush at the behest of the Amgushi. So he's like, he goes and gives a shir, and then he also like fundraises there. Umehan menuchas nefesh ba'aguf min ha'masim ha'kashim ba'malachos ha'yagos ha'saguf va'aza va'vodas ha'malachim va'chukeyem va'chamas ansheyem. So again, this person does not, the Baal Bitachon does not need to stress out his body to get anything that isn't currently in his reality. He also doesn't need like socially to stress himself, right? He doesn't need to basically suck up to kings and to people with power and to people with money. Right? It's just not how he functions. He doesn't think that he needs anything outside of his reality to be able to accomplish what he's meant to accomplish in this world. That's not his starting point. His starting point is looking at his reality and deriving from his reality the starting point from which he goes forward. So again, this is also in terms of his parnasa, right? That he chooses, basically the Baal HaBitachon chooses a siba, like a cause for his parnasa. And then once he does, he assumes that the reason that he gets it is from Hashem. Which is actually like fascinating, right? It's not, because otherwise, what if we don't say it this way, what are we forced to say, basically? We're forced to say that like the real Baal HaBitachon should do one thing. One time, once a month, whatever, once a week. He should go and buy one lottery ticket and he should really have faith that if he's meant to have money, Hashem will give him money. And otherwise, he's looking at his reality and he doesn't have money and he's saying, if Hashem wanted me to have something different, I would have been like born wealthy or whatever, and I wasn't, so I'm going to get a lottery ticket and Hashem is going to give me wealth. All right, but again, that's not Avodas Hashem. And that's not either Bitachon. If somebody gets that lottery ticket and genuinely has faith that God is going to make him win the lottery, it's still not actually Bitachon. That is not a Baal HaBitachon. Look at the relationship here. It's fascinating that he has with money. He believes that Hashem gives him money. But if he really believed that Hashem gave him money and that was all that was asked of him in the equation, then he would buy a lottery ticket and believe that the money would come from Hashem. But that's not what he does. And that's not what he's asked to do. He's asked to find a reason that he should get what he thinks that he needs. Right? And his reason here is like his profession, let's say. So he chooses a profession. He chooses a business. And it's a siba, right? It's a cause. It's a reason that he should get the parnasa that he needs. So he's responsible for that reason. Buying a lottery ticket is a very bad reason, right? It's a very bad cause for parnasa, because for like 99.9999 repeating percentage of people who buy lottery tickets, it doesn't go anywhere. So it's not a great strategy. It's not a great thought out seichelik idea of his to buy a lottery ticket and call it a day. Right, so you are responsible for picking a reason that Hashem should give you mamo, that Hashem should give you parnasa. You do what you are supposed to be doing. You find a profession that fits you, that makes sense, that is in your city, let's say, or whatever, or just doesn't like kill you in your attempt to get it. As like saying, you don't have to like stress out your body and go across the ocean and blah 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 and do all the stuff that's really really bad for you, right? And then once you do that, you believe that after you are responsible for that reason that you should get what you need. Then you believe that when you do get what you need, it comes from Hashem.
So what's the whole concept of, like, collecting money? Why is there such thing as, like, people who go around collecting money for their families?
Right. It's a good question because, like, again, I would never, like, I would think, let me put it this way. I would think that anybody who's in the position of having to collect money needs to ask their Rebbe that Shaila, right? Like, what's my relationship with Bitachon? What's my relationship with taking care of my own reality and trying to set it up to give me the things that I think that I need, right? Like, I can't really answer that, the cheshbon on behalf of that person, and I would never, like, try to, right? But I would say, like, exactly your question is the cheshbon that they have to be making, right? What am I setting up my sibos in the best way for Hashem to give me money? And if I am and it's still not working, at what point do I collect money? And when I am collecting money, what's my relationship with Bitachon? If I'm really believing that Hashem is giving this to me, how is that, right? How does that work with my responsibilities? On the other hand, bracha, right? It's certainly our collective communal responsibility to support people who are poor, right? There is a mitzvah for us to support people who are poor. There's an assumption that there are going to be poor people. So from our perspective, it's a mitzvah on us to support people who need money. And that's what we're trying to do. So like, it is legitimate for people to be doing that. We see that it's built into society, that it's legitimate for people to be collecting money. But again, how it plays into Avodas Hashem on both sides of it is exactly the question. Yeah, Carrie?
Oh, no, I was going to say that piece that you said at the end, that it's like built into our society and Torah and mitzvos, that like that is a piece of what we're supposed to be doing. So whether or not every person is doing it from a for every person who's collecting as a Baba B'Tachon, it's not really our concern.
Exactly.
But we know that there is a reality where somebody could be a Baba B'Tachon and collecting money.
Exactly. Awesome. Awesome.
So shouldn't we not be giving them money and more be giving them, like, a parnasa?
For sure. That's the biggest, the greatest tzedakah is giving somebody a means to support themselves. 100%. That's what the Rambam.
Right.
Right, teach so not a man to, don't give a man a fish, teach him to fish. Right, give a man a fish and you feed him for a day, teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. That's, I think, Jesus, so we're right. Not really going to quote him in his Chabura, but yeah, it's the same concept. That's Rambam, 1,000 years later.
So, like, what's better?
It's certainly better to give someone a parnasa. No, for sure. For sure, the biggest tzedakah you could ever do is give somebody a job, right? Like, if we could give people jobs, we definitely should be doing that. 100%. Giving them a means to support themselves, for sure. And Bracha, what you're saying also, which is gishmak, is that it's not only a bigger mitzvah for us, it's better for their avodas Hashem, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. If you're trying to take care of your own avodas Hashem and their avodas Hashem, you give them a means of supporting themselves.
Like, I feel like there's, like, Rabbanim who sign these documents that, like, collectors go around with. Like, why is there, you know, like, why... Why is that something that they're doing for them as opposed to saying, here is, like, someone who will find you a job?
Say it again, Carrie.
We don't know that they're not doing that at the same time. Like, finding a job is not simple. Finding a job to support a from family is, like, really not simple.
Right.
It's a good answer. Good answer. Awesome. Okay, I think this is the last paragraph, or one of the last paragraphs. Umehan simchaso b'chol enyan sheyatok elav, ve'im yihye kenegativo mipnei bitchono b'elokim shelo yaselo ela hatovlo. Okay, so again, this is probably the most difficult paragraph that we're going to have. This is, like, again, the centerpiece of bitachon, but also the centerpiece of bitachon, and we know this already, right? Which is that the Baal HaBitachon has a certain simcha, a certain happiness, and again, don't worry, we're going to go into it, like, for a minute. They have a certain simcha, that in everything that happens to him, even if it feels bad, right? If it goes against his nature, if it is not settling with him, at the same time that it's difficult and not settling with him, he has a certain happiness because of his bitachon that Hashem is only doing good for him. And that somehow, in the larger scheme of it, this is what's good for him. B'chol inin ka'asher ta'asa ha'im ha'chomeles livina, livna, okay? In the same way that a mother takes care of her child, Berechitza so, v'chatulo, v'kisharto, v'hasara so, al karcho. Right? Like, a mother takes care of her kid. And again, we say this all the time to Rafal, to my baby who's 1.5 years old. We always say to Rafal, it's so hard to be a baby, right? It's so hard to be a baby because, like, it's annoying. He's always crying that we're, like, we're getting him dressed, we're getting him undressed, we're giving him a bath, we're changing his diaper. Like, there's a lot of stuff that happens that he doesn't like, right? But we're taking care of him. So again, Rav Lichter said, which is, like, fascinating, I wouldn't have thought about, like, the example here is not of, well, let me say something before that, right? Which is that while the Baal HaBitachon has this feeling of simcha in some capacity, whatever that means, right? This certain contentment, let's say, with reality, he still feels like it is against his nature, right? Again, he's not indifferent. He's not saying, well, since I have bitachon, like, my world doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter. And if this is actually hard, I'm not experiencing it as hard. I'm not experiencing it as anything because I'm a Baal HaBitachon and I have menuchas nefesh, right? That's not what's happening here. What's happening here is that something is happening to this Baal HaBitachon that's against what he wants. It's against his rutzon. It's against what he wants out of his world. It's against his nature. It's a painful experience that he's experiencing. And he doesn't say, geshmak, I experience this as being good. Right? He's saying, I understand that there's this reality surrounding me that I don't understand, in which in some other reality, this is what is good for me somehow. And again, therefore I can work with it. And it's lechachila in some weird way for me. Again, it's extremely difficult. It's very hard for me to say this, as I'm sure it's hard for anyone to say this, right? But again, and Rav Lichter pointed out something which I actually loved, where he said it's interesting that the example given here is of a mother and a child and not like a doctor and a patient, right? Very often in this kind of situation, the example is like a doctor who, remember we did the bloodletting? I think that was by Purim, right? Like the example of bloodletting, like they're making a cut to extract the poison, which wasn't actually what bloodletting ended up doing, right? But like I had my appendix removed. So it's like the doctor is cutting me in order to remove my appendix. So I have like no tainas on doctor. I'm like, thank you for cutting me. I'm not upset he cut me. Right? So that's usually how these examples go. And instead here, it's something different, which is like a mother taking care of her infant, which is fascinating. So what's the difference? Can anyone like detect it? I don't think I would have been able to had he not said it. What's the difference between the doctor-patient model and the mother-child model? Yeah, Carrie.
There, you know that there's love from a mother to her child. There's no love. There's like a obligation, a monetary exchange. Like, it's very different with the doctor. But you know, when it's your mother, you know, a mother like taking care of her baby, you know that, you know, she doesn't want to see her baby cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very different relationship. Awesome.
Right, exactly, right. The relationship makes it so much bigger. It makes it all encompassing. The doctor and the relationship with the patient, like you're saying, it's monetary, it's limited. It's like there's something wrong and the doctor is trying to fix it, but that's the end of their relationship. That's it. Right? So that's not how we experience things that we're struggling with from God. We don't experience it of like, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong that I'm doing. And God is like trying to fix me by giving me this stuff. Like he's cutting me because he's trying to like fix me. And then as soon as I'm fixed, he's going to go away. Right? That's not what it is. It's much more like us saying to Rafal, oh, it's so hard to be a baby, right? Because it's like this all-encompassing reality in which you're being taken care of. And you understand that even though relatively frequently there are things that are uncomfortable that come up within it, it is within the context, those things are within the context of you being taken care of on the large scale, on the grand scheme. And it's like really a shift. I don't know. To me, it was like a real shift. It's not, we don't think that like we're given what we're given because God is trying to fix us. And like, you know, we say like, what does God want from me? And so that I could do it and like God will go away. Right? That's not the relationship. Like let the doctor come and fix me so that I'm healed and then he goes away. It's not. It's like this all encompassing reality in which we're mostly being taken care of. And even the things that we're not being taken care of or that feel uncomfortable, we still are being taken care of. Okay, 48 over here is the last one, and then he just is going to tell us what he's going to do in the rest of the sefer, and you can read that yourself. I don't need to read that out loud. The kivan shebe arti mitovah sebitocha. No, okay, fine. So then, just kidding. 48 is his introduction to telling us what else is going to happen. Okay, so good. So that is the end of the introduction. I'm going to turn this off before I give a little personal, more personal example.